This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Future Hindsight, a weekly podcast with a mission to inspire civic engagement and renew trust in our democratic process. The Future Hindsight team joins me in wishing all of you a very happy holiday season. If you haven't yet, listen to their recent season on their opportunities to rebuild America in the wake of COVID-19. Listen to Future Hindsight wherever you get your podcasts. Now for our show. It is Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Parton, or Digby, will join us. Writer at Salon.com and proprietor of the blog Hullabaloo. To round out the year, to look forward, and also to talk about Trump kneecapping McConnell, agrees with Bernie Sanders' proposal calls for $2,000 checks. Meanwhile, Democrats pounce. They're going to call for unanimous consent on those checks. The real question is, will they hold a vote? U.S. tops 18 million cases as COVID care rationing spreads. Over 3,200 people died yesterday in this country from COVID. Meanwhile, Donald Trump pardons 15 people, four of whom were criminals. Joe Biden weighs using the Defense Production Act for vaccine production. Warren Sanders and six other Democratic senators push for investigation into Trump's execution spree. And a Dominion Election System employee sues Newsmax, OWN, and the Trump campaign over the death threats they have received. Speaking of suing, the Department of Justice sues Walmart over its role in the opioid crisis. And lastly, Joe Biden selects Miguel Cardona, Education Commissioner of Connecticut, as his new Secretary of Education. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. To the show, Emma Vigeland is here with me today, of course, like every day. Hello, Emma.
Every day these days. How are you, Sam?
I am well. I'm getting used to that. I realize, oh, wait, Emma's here again. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
I know.
Now, Emma, we had talked about this show yesterday, mm-hmm. and it was going to be a look back on the year, because it's the final live program that we are doing this year, and look back on the year and then a look forward to next year.
Right.
The omnibus spending bill had passed. The COVID relief bill had passed in conjunction. They rolled it all together. That's what they do. We'll talk a little bit about why they would do something like that. And by all accounts, the president was going to sign this bill. And
spoiler alert,
2020 is not over yet, and neither is the Trump administration.
Man, you know, just a gift for us. I know we're going to get into it a little bit, but Trump really handed the Democrats a golden opportunity here.
There is a golden opportunity, both politically and in terms of policy wise, for the country in multiple ways. We're going to get into it. We're obviously going to talk about it with Digby. But first, let's start today the sequencing of what happened yesterday. It started, and this is unrelated to what Trump did, but it is the story, the TikTok, as they call it, right? This is when the reporter goes in and gives like the sequencing of events is pretty stunning. Nobody seemed to know that Donald Trump was going to do this. There had been a report last week that, I think it was on Thursday of last week, Donald Trump's advisors had to talk him out of trying to scuttle the deal for a $2,000 check.
And we had assumed that because he's too lazy, because he's too preoccupied with trying to overturn the election results, that this was that and he wasn't going to do anything except sign this bill.
Right. And we will get back to that because I'm not convinced that those two concepts are mutually exclusive.
Well, neither am I.
But before Donald Trump blows up the relief package, Mike Pence is in Georgia rallying support for the Georgia runoffs, which are happening in now 12 days, January 5th. And there's two things to note here. One is the Republicans in Georgia who are going to this rally with Mike Pence, and this is at a TPUSA conference. This is the Charlie Kirk organization, ostensibly to corrupt the minds of college students. And he is there ostensibly to get people to vote in the election, but they care about one thing and one thing only, and that is Donald Trump's election. And he moves past that, and really, this is one of those moments where it would be a gaffe if it wasn't for the fact that it really was just an expression of what their attitude is. Here is Mike Pence at that rally.
So I don't think I have to tell you this. So for all we've done, for all we have yet to do, stay in the fight. Stay in the fight in our election. Stay in the fight in Georgia's election. And stay in the fight every day that follows.
That's not what I meant. Yep.
Stay in the fight. All the fight.
Stay in the fight. To be a check on what the Democrats and the radical left want to do and what they want to undo. All that we've done. You know, our agenda.
That's not exactly stop the steal, is it? Greatness.
Their agenda is about American decline. Where we cut taxes, rolled back regulation, and advanced freedom, their agenda is higher taxes, open borders, socialized medicine, a Green New Deal, and abortion on demand.
Oh.
They want to make rich people poorer and poor people more comfortable.
Wait, what? Hold on.
That's it.
Hey, man.
There you go.
You stumbled on the truth. My amendment to your statement would be that progressives want to do that. Democrats want to tweak along those margins. But I love him just saying it. Yeah, like that is our agenda. Thank you for accurately describing it to Turning Points USA and the audience.
The horror.
I know.
Of in any way making American or any people, for that matter, more comfortable. Think of the horror. I mean, this is part and parcel of the conservative ideology that has been shared by every Republican who has held office, the vast majority. And I include Paul Ryan into this. I mean, there's multiple examples that we used to talk about all the time about, and frankly, this is why Donald Trump won their primary. Because the reason why to Mike Pence, the idea of making folks living in poverty more comfortable is so reprehensible is it does not hold them to account for their poverty. Because in their mind, their poverty, living in poverty, is a sign of some type of moral defect, some type of character defect, as opposed to, and frankly, we have millions of people apparently who have that defect. This has been the conservative line for decades now, that if you do not have money, you are in some way morally less righteous than those who do, which is why Donald Trump was able to walk on a stage. And regardless of the fact that he had no policy expertise whatsoever, regardless of the fact that he had no government service expertise whatsoever, regardless of the fact that his business was just a series of bankruptcies. And had he taken the $300 million that his dad bequeathed him and just put it in an index fund, he would be richer than he is today. Because he was the richest person on that stage, there was no arguing with him, because he wouldn't be, according to conservative ideology, that rich unless he was righteous, unless he was in the right, unless he knew. And so this is an extension of that same thing. And it is not in any way unique to Donald Trump. Mike Pence is a run-of-the-mill, a little bit more theocratic, I think, than most Republicans, but certainly not within this necessarily this administration, a run-of-the-mill Koch brothers Republican, just like Paul Ryan was, just like John Boehner was in many respects. I mean, this is the ideology they espouse. This is not unique to Trump in any way whatsoever.
I mean, you're on point with this. It's a rarity, but no, I'm joking. Obviously, I agree with you. And the fact that Mike Pence is so theocratic and is so vocal about his religious beliefs, that's what makes this kind of penalization of poverty so extra egregious for me, because it should be the opposite. I mean, the teachings of religion are about compassion for the poor and not just making things even more uncomfortable for them. He should, in theory, based on his beliefs, be in favor of making people's lives more comfortable.
It's tough love.
But instead, his beliefs, or his purported beliefs, have become so intertwined with his authoritarianism that it's now indistinguishable. And the authoritarianism is mixed in with this worship of wealth, and that's reflected in policy. So it's one thing to just have these beliefs and say them, and like you're a drunk uncle at a bar or whatever. But the fact of the matter is that a party that currently controls the Senate and the outgoing president is a part of, they believe this and they reflect it in policy that hurts and affects millions and millions of people on a yearly basis.
All right. And we're going to talk about this with Heather Parton, but let's play this clip of Donald Trump later in the day. This is after, remember now, Mike Pence has talked about, you don't want to make anyone living in poverty more comfortable. That would be a bad thing. Here's Donald Trump coming out and essentially blowing up or purporting to blow up and essentially handing a gift. And we will talk more about this with Heather Parton. But there's two things to note about this. He gave a 4-minute speech. We're not going to play the whole thing. But he lists a litany of items in the speech that are part, in his mind, of the COVID bill, that have nothing to do with COVID.
It's the omnibus package.
But he's listing like there's money that goes to NASA. There's money that goes to this country or that country. There's money that goes to the poultry, or money that goes to the to the Library of Congress, and he lists all the money, which adds up to $3.8 billion. And doesn't quite get the math right on what the adding to $1,400 per person on top of the $600 that went out, that would be closer to a $380 billion. So his math is a little bit off. But also on top of that, which is fine, I'm okay with him not having those math skills, because I think we should have $2,000 per person.
Right.
He also, like you say, does not realize that the COVID bill was tied to the omnibus budget bill, or I should say the budget bill, and the whole thing became an omnibus package. And those things are in the budget of the United States
It doesn't even matter, because the whole point is that he wants to look like the populace, which is why he's coming out in favor of $2,000 checks. It doesn't matter if he doesn't follow through with it. It delays the bill enough and undercuts McConnell ahead of the Georgia runoff.
Well, we will talk more about that aspect with Heather, but here is that clip.
Then the Americans are given, despite all of this wasteful spending and much more, the $900 billion package provides hardworking taxpayers with only $600 each in relief payments. and not enough money is given to small businesses, and in particular restaurants, whose owners have suffered so grievously, they were only given a deduction for others to use in business their restaurant for 2 years. This two-year period must be withdrawn, which will allow the owners to obtain financing and get their restaurants back in condition. Congress can terminate it at a much later date, but 2 years is not acceptable. It's not enough. Congress found plenty of money for foreign countries, lobbyists, and special interests while sending the bare minimum to the American people who need it. It wasn't their fault. It was China's fault, not their fault. I am asking Congress to amend this bill and increase the ridiculously low $600 to $2,000 or $4,000 for a couple. I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation and to send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package, and maybe that administration will be me, and we will get it done. Thank you very much.
He never gets old. I've watched that a bunch of times.
Maybe that administration will be me.
Just me.
I think
I am the Senate. I am the administration.
We're going to talk to Heather about this because I'm not convinced that those two concepts of the $2,000 and the next administration will be me are distinct. However, one thing you should also note, as you take that in, and we will talk about it, the implications of this with Heather, because this is a huge gift to the Democrats. And to a large extent, they have already begun the process of accepting the gift. There's more that they have to do. But you'll note that the one thing he was talking about, too, was that business deduction.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say who the deduction was for. But if you go into a restaurant, one of the things they put into the operating budget was a business deduction for lunches for businesses that had been taken away in the past.
Free martini lunch deduction, it's called, derisively, appropriately so.
And he thinks that 2 years is not going to be enough. He apparently expects to be eating a lot of lunches going forward that he's going to have to pay for and would like to have those deducted.
Man. So again, worst case scenario, we're getting that other bill, but $2,000 checks, like, that might be a possibility right now.
That might be a possibility. And there are huge both policy implications for Americans out there. $2,000 is obviously more than three times $600. But also in terms of the politics of this, Nancy Pelosi in particular has an incredible opportunity that, to bring up a standalone bill and force over 150 Republicans to vote against Donald Trump in the House and to force Mitch McConnell to vote against this or not bring up the bill and have him pay the price in Georgia. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Heather Parton about this. We are back. Joining us via Zoom is Heather Parton, or Digby, from the blog Hullabaloo and a writer at Salon.com. Heather, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
We're doing well. Now, Heather, we touched base yesterday about what we'd be talking about today, and we presumed it would be a look back on the year and a look forward because much of the major, I guess, legislation of this year had been sort of finished. And Donald Trump stepped into the fray and blew everything up and apparently surprised a lot of his own advisors.
Apparently, he's really mad at Mitch McConnell. I mean, he is so mad at Mitch McConnell because that's, in my view, that's what this is really all about. I mean, I think you know, Trump could have been in, he has wanted to give a bunch of money away as part of, you know, some kind of a relief slash stimulus from the beginning, but he never bothered to participate in any way. I mean, he's been so obsessed with his own reelection and with this ridiculous post-election, you know, dispute and all of that, that he didn't bother to really involve himself in that. And he could have, and had he pressed it, and all he had to do was unleash his MAGA cult, right? And to call up all of their senators and say, we demand this $2,000, we followed, you know, Trump, do what he says. And he probably could have gotten them to do it. He just didn't bother. But and I don't think he cares even now. I don't, you know, he says that, but I don't think he cares. But the reason that he's so upset is because Mitch McConnell has told the senators, first of all, he acknowledged the Biden election, you know, because he accepted reality. And he also told his senators not to participate in this little pageant they're planning for January 6th. Where they want to object to the electoral, you know, to the certification of the Electoral College vote, and he wants the senators to object to it and vote against it. And you know, this is a ridiculous thing. I mean, it's not going to happen. But because he heard, and this was reported, that Mitch McConnell told his people, please don't vote for this because it means, and this was the reasoning, it means that you'll have to vote against Donald Trump because, you know, we're not going to actually do this. So that's putting our guys in a terrible position where there's going to be a vote against Donald Trump is going to hurt us in 2022. That was Mitch McConnell's convoluted rationale for not wanting to do this. And Trump is mad at him for that. And he went after John Thune, the deputy, the deputy majority leader, whatever it is, who said, you know, from South Dakota, who said, look, you know, it's not going to happen. So why put everybody through this? And so Trump went after McConnell. On Monday night, he sent around a graph showing that somehow or another McConnell's re-election was due to Donald Trump's tweets and endorsements and some robocall that he did. And then last night, he sent out a tweet that said, you know, McConnell blew it and that John Thune is a rhino and he's going to primary him in 2022. And so he is mad. And what that did is it's exactly as you say, it's a tremendous gift to Nancy Pelosi. And to Pelosi and Schumer's credit, yep, instead of dilly-dallying as they usually do or following the Amy Klobuchar, some of the other sort of centrist types I've noticed in pundit, you know, in the punditocracy going on and on about how, well, we really can't, this is the process and we made a deal and blah, blah, blah. Pelosi and Schumer came out immediately, as did AOC and a bunch of others, and said, yeah, we're there. Good. We're following, don't follow the leader, you know, do this thing. And I was actually kind of proud of them for taking yes for an answer.
Well, because it's really just a no-lose situation in this sense, right? Because either they call Trump's bluff and delay the stimulus, which helps in the Georgia runoffs, or they do this unanimous consent vote. It fails because obviously at least one Republican in both the Senate and the House is going to object to it. And then the part that I worry about is, will Pelosi take this up as a standalone bill after the unanimous consent fails, which I wouldn't put it past her. It seems like a no-brainer, but I wouldn't put it past her to just do this theater part and then not.
Well, that is the real question. And we should just, you know, just to back up a little bit, because Schumer and Pelosi, you're right, just came out immediately. In fact, Schumer, I think, retweeted AOC's bill that she has with Rashida Tlaib. And I think they actually called for $2,020 just a way to say goodbye to 2020. But nevertheless, Schumer was right on top of that. And this does, there is no, I mean, the delay is, it seems to me, there is no delay. I mean, it's a question of whether or not Donald Trump signs this bill. And he may not sign it. He may not sign it at this point, or he could just pocket veto it by just letting it expire, which is probably more likely. And like Emma says, there's, you know, Pelosi came out and said, we're going to take this unanimous consent, which is very much, this is also how they did the CARES Act. This is where you can vote from a distance. And as long as there's no one who says no, and that's it. But there's obviously an expectation that somebody's going to say no. And then the real question becomes, does Nancy Pelosi have, I don't even know how to describe this, the inclination, I mean, I want to say bravery, but that seems to be too strong of a word for what you need, to call people back during the Christmas break and make them take a vote and make the Republicans vote against this bill, then send it to the Senate and make Mitch McConnell either not bring it up. I mean, this seems to be a genuine moment where Nancy Pelosi cannot escape because there's a broader awareness. Like, you know, I feel like 15 years ago, Heather, that they could have gotten away with the UC, with the unanimous consent. There was no Twitter. There was no social media. People wouldn't talk about it. They wouldn't know about it. But today, because people jumped on this very quickly, Adam Gentleson, who was a former chief of staff in Harry Reid's office, I believe it was, and David Dayen and others, there's an awareness now of this type of thing.
Absolutely. And there was, you know, from the moment that it happened, there was a ton of analysis that was going out on Twitter, and I assume Facebook as well, and other social media, that was discussing the intricacies of this. And it's fairly complicated, the way that this could unfold in a number of ways that could be good or bad. A pocket veto, if it sits there too long, the Congress expires, you got to go back and redo the whole thing. You've got, you know, there are a lot of things that could happen there. But you're absolutely right. This is a moment where, you know, I mean, who cares if Donald Trump gets credit for this thing? He's gone. I mean, that's not going to change. Now, Trump may feel like somehow or another this will give him, you know, what he needs politically to overturn the election, but it's not true. I mean, he can think that. Sure. But we all know, let him have credit for it. Fine. You know, hey, Trump, good. Bye. That was an excellent parting gift. We really appreciate it. The American people, thank you for your service.
Yeah. Just add Emma was implying that he also may see this as being valuable. Who knows if he's going to run in 2024, but there is value to him. Sure. And that he is. And like, this is, you know, this is that scene from, like, you know, Little Italy in New York, where, you know, the mob boss would go out and throw around $100 bills. Christmas. He gets to do that. It's definitely going to help him down the road, but not necessarily with Democratic voters. I mean, people, I don't think like people are going to walk away from this, and because the Democrats jumped on it. But so walk us through this. He pocket vetoes it. The whole bill, this is the omnibus, and this is, you know, the government shuts down. That's going to put pressure on McConnell to bring that up, even though the COVID stuff was a function of Georgia. Yeah. There's 11 days here, and the Democrats have been so quick on this. She has to call a vote. I mean, this is literally the Democrats get to play Santa Claus and basically daring Mitch McConnell to be Scrooge or, you know,
the Grinch.
The Grinch or whomever it is.
There you go.
Well, let me ask you, why can't they do that today? I mean, why can't you just go, they haven't left yet, have they? I mean, they have to be there to override the veto if for some reason he does it, right? So they're there. Why can't you just go, look, we're going to do this standalone bill. It's just going to sit here. We won't send it over unless we need to. But everybody, we're all on board. Get the vote done and have it there. And just say, you know, Trump, we're with you. We're ready. We're going to have this. If this is how we have to do it, this is how we have to do it. That would put tremendous pressure on McConnell and whoever, if they want to go in and amend this thing. Now, I don't know what the process is for amending the bill at this point. Do you? I mean, is it difficult? Could they...
I think the idea would be that, I mean, amending the bill would be more difficult because then you'd have to have amendments come out of the House. They'd have to get passed, or they'd come to the Senate, and they'd have to get passed by both houses, and they would go back and forth. In this instance, you could just have a standalone bill and say to Trump, you know, we're giving you this standalone bill, sign off on that one. Maybe he doesn't sign off on the omnibus. You get another bite at the apple there.
Yeah.
And You get that $2,000.
That's my fear. That's my fear, is that this unanimous consent, she might wipe her hands of it once it's done, because they want a bill going into next year, and they fear, say, worst case scenario, the Georgia runoffs don't go their way, then they're never going to get another stimulus package with McConnell still holding on to the Senate. And clearly, Democratic leadership has signaled that they want something done, and they don't care as much about what is in it, because Biden is worried about the economic fallout next year. I mean, that's what I think.
But a standalone bill,
towards, though.
The only reason why you wouldn't do a standalone bill at this point, and I don't know why they couldn't bring it. Well, no, but the only reason why you wouldn't do it is because you don't want to come back for Christmas, that you want to allow people to get out the door. And so, like, you know, the bill has been written already. It might take longer to get the standalone bill, but we're only talking literally, I think, like a day. And that is really what it seems to come down to. There doesn't seem to be any type of procedural hurdles or whatnot. It doesn't interfere with the bill that's already been passed. This is a real, like, I mean, this would be an incredible, an incredible failure if Pelosi just decided 100%. It's too much to ask for lawmakers to stay home.
Well, that's ridiculous.
I mean,
that's the rationale. It's completely absurd. Not to mention the fact that how would this affect the Georgia race? I think it would be hugely positive.
I agree. Because,
you know, especially if Nancy's out there pushing it, Pelosi and Schumer, you've got the Democrats out there going, look, we don't love Donald Trump. But when it comes to doing things for the American people, we're the ones who are going to do it. And you could have Warnock and Ossoff. In fact, Ossoff came out. Warnock probably did too. I just didn't see it, but came out immediately going, yes, I'm for the $2,000. This is, you know, this is something that Democrats can run on.
And this is a clip from Tuesday night, I believe it was, last night. Ossoff doing that very thing on CNN. Let's play this clip.
President Trump is, as ever, erratic and all over the place. But on this point tonight, he's right. $600 is a joke. They should send $2,000 checks to the American people right now because people are hurting. And David Perdue, my opponent, who opposed even the first round of $1,200 checks. Imagine that. Imagine a sitting U.S. senator who was profiting from the pandemic, buying medical and vaccine stocks, opposed even the first single round of $1,200 checks, has obstructed direct relief for the last 8 months, and now decided he wanted to cut it down to $600 when people can barely feed their families through no fault of their own. Congress should pass $2,000 checks. They should have done it 2 months ago.
Well, you know, you vote.
I mean, I don't know. John Ossoff is not going to be my favorite senator in the Senate. But I don't know how you could do a better job as a candidate than he just did in those 60 seconds.
Oh, he's good at that stuff. I mean, I have to give him credit. He's very glib. He's very, you know, he's very, very articulate. And he often sort of is able to, he's very good at sort of wrapping everything up in his message, which is, of course, about Perdue being a corrupt, you know, multimillionaire, which of course he is. And he, he did that very skillfully, I thought. And he's right. Look, I mean, that is a message everybody knows. I mean, maybe they'll give Donald Trump credit for, you know, gee, he loves me and he's given me $2,000. And I just think that guy's terrific. Well, we'll deal with him down the road, you know, one step at a time. Right now, I think it's pretty clear that everybody understands it. It's the Democrats. However badly the Democrats have messaged all this, and we talked about this earlier in the week, Sam, about what a waste it was of all those months of the Democrats not taking full advantage of the fact that they had passed the CARES bill and, you know, talking about specifically what it was they were trying to do and using that to contrast with the fact that the Republicans were stonewalling it all the way. I mean, this was a very useful thing. Even just as a messaging bill, it just wasn't messaged very well. And all people knew was that there's a bunch of money. They didn't know what it was for. They didn't know how it was specifically, you know, aimed at people. And this, though, is very clearly $2,000. Everybody can understand that. It's $2,000 per person, I think, which would be $4,000 for a couple and then another $2,000 for each kid. As far as it, $1,000 for a kid, I can't remember.
No,
it's a lot of money.
You didn't go into the details of that. what they'd end up doing. Yeah,
right, exactly. Right, of course.
But your point is, and
but if you did it built on what we'd previously done, it would be something like that.
Exactly. I mean, I imagine. You could get $2,000 for a head of the household, and if there's a couple, it's $4,000. And any dependent child would be $600. It would be good to extend this while you're at it, while you're there, to any dependent adult. Maybe you give $2,000 per any adult in the household type of situation. But nevertheless, you're right, and it's the HEROES Act that was the messaging bill that they passed over the summer, and that one was $3.8 trillion. Nobody can really mention what's in it. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in there, but as a messaging bill, it fails because all we remember is $3.8 trillion and the word heroes, as opposed to if they had just like, you could have had a messaging bill and be like, we're going to give $5,000 per person. Everybody would remember exactly what that is. But this scenario we have now, very similar to the scenario that could have existed prior to the election. It was $1.8 trillion on the table. I believe, I'm not sure, you know, we don't know the details of this, but there, you know, they must have come up with that number in some fashion. There was certainly checks that were being cut to people of larger than 600, could have been 1200 or 1400, could have been 2000. Nancy Pelosi did not take that opportunity prior to the election to do what she can do now, essentially. And it feels like...
Right. She has a second chance to leverage Trump's selfishness and selfish desire in this instance against the Republican Party. She could have done that before the election, but was afraid of the consequences electorally. I find part pretty vile, but whatever. Now she has a second chance gifted to her by Trump because of his own selfishness.
And I guess it's just a matter of time. We will get a better notion, I think, within, you know, probably by the end of the day or maybe in the next 48 hours, you know, how it's going to go. They're going to try the unanimous consent first, and then we'll see. And the idea of putting another $380 billion directly into the pockets of people whose combined income is less than $75,000 a year, that's going to have a real positive impact on people's lives. And if you couple that with the $25 billion of rental assistance that's in there, you know, we're going to have another period, possibly if this passes, where poverty is diminished dramatically in the country for at least a period of time.
As it should be. I mean, look, we're in the middle of a crisis that's getting worse. The pandemic is exploding. I mean, I live in California and, you know, I mean, we're afraid to leave the house at this point. I mean, it is ridiculous. It is the ICUs are full in Los Angeles County. And that there we have a lot of hospitals here and it is full. So, you know, you don't have your heart attack now. Because if you do, you're going to have it in the lobby of the hospital because they don't have ICU beds available for you. So this is really bad. And it is the economic fallout is horrible here and all over the country. You know, I mean, Trump went on and on in that speech that you played about, hit restaurants. Right. And so we brought back the three martini lunch, which, by the way, was brought up to him in a meeting with Wolfgang Puck, who runs Spago over here and other, you know, high-end restaurants. And he was, you know, it's really hurt us that we don't have the three martini lunch. Well, let me tell you, that's not what the problem with the restaurants is. The restaurants are suffering because they can't open at all. Nobody's having martinis, right? I mean, they are unable to serve martinis at lunch because they can't serve lunch. So this is really totally beside the point. And I'm sure that some high-end restaurants are happy to have that, but that's kind of, you know, evading what's really going on in the restaurant industry, for theaters, for bars, for everything are suffering. And this kind of thing, just putting some money in people's pockets, along with all the other things that they did negotiate in the bill, which, you know, the bill came out better than I might have thought it would. I mean, it's clear that the Georgia race had an effect on Republicans. Mitch told them, you know, what did he say? Kelly and Dave are really getting hit hard. You know, we really need to help Kelly and Dave out. It's like, oh, Mitch, your empathy is overwhelming. I feel so warm inside at how much you care. But nonetheless, it ended up being a pretty you know, a better bill than it might have been. I mean, let's just put it that way. Some of the poison pills, they were managed to pare down, and they got rid of a few of the things that were really, really awful. So it's better than nothing, way too late and much too little, but, you know, it is what it is. But nonetheless, this you know, idea of actually throwing, you know, putting more actual cash in people's hands, particularly as, you know, this eviction thing, I don't think people understand that when this eviction moratorium goes away, and they're hoping to extend it for a while, but when it does go away, people are still going to owe that back rent. It's a moratorium. It's not, you know, eliminating your rent for this entire period. So people who have been unable, who've not been working, who've been unable to pay their rent this whole time, they're going to be hit with thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in back rent. I mean, this is going to be a horrible kind of explosion. Yep. On a lot of people. So this kind of cash, at least there'll be that, you know, to maybe get, you can buy some food for the month. You can do that sort of thing and perhaps get through enough so that you can get back to work and negotiate some kind of back rent payment. If I were in that position, I don't know what I'd do. I couldn't come up with $10,000.
There is, in this COVID relief bill, there's $25 billion. I don't know if that's sufficient. I haven't seen the numbers. But there is $25 billion in rental assistance that presumably would be sent to agencies in states and cities. Now, I don't know if that's enough, to be honest with you. It doesn't sound like it is sufficient. So I would imagine, and I'm not sure exactly how that would be distributed, but there is $25 billion there. The moratorium on evictions would go into deep into January, so that presumably Biden would have the ability to say to the CDC, we need to, and Biden CDC would extend the moratorium for health reasons. But then you're right. We still have that major problem that people are still going to owe rent. I mean, at one point, we're going to have to either deal with that rent, or you're going to have literally millions of people perhaps facing bankruptcy and homelessness. And so, yeah, huge issue. There's a great. Sorry, go ahead.
There's a landlord problem, too. Small landlords, people who maybe own an apartment building or, you know, are renting out some kind of small units or whatever, they're not getting the money that they need to pay their mortgages or whatever the loans that they have on these places. I mean, it, you know, this thing snowballs. And the idea that this is what's so frustrating about this, is that we sat here all these months knowing this stuff. I mean, this isn't anything new that just cropped up. We knew from last spring that we were facing this. All the epidemiologists, everybody said, look, the winter's going to be terrible. You know, maybe we'll get a respite in the summer, which we didn't really get because, you know, we can't do anything right in America anymore. So we had a surge in the summer that was kind of unexpected. And then this, the worst case scenario is unfolding as we speak. And so they had all that time to plan it, and they put through the HEROES Act, which had a lot of, you know, it was a basis for good faith negotiations, had they wanted to do that. It just didn't exist. So here we are facing emergency after emergency and the fallout. I just hope everybody is prepared for how, you know, just awful it's going to be when the Biden administration comes in and tries to straighten all this out, because it's a terrible mess. And the mess has been absolutely exacerbated by the lack of, you know, action on the part of the U.S. Congress. So, you know, and who knows what's going on in the executive branch, right? I mean, God knows the carnage that Trump is leaving behind there.
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to see. I mean, one of the things that was not fixed in this omnibus bill was a reversal of an executive order that Trump issued, changing. It's the Schedule F executive order, which essentially allows for political appointees to move into civil service positions without having to have the same testing qualifications that you would normally have to get into the civil service. So this is part of his borrowing and embedding, you know, political appointees in our professional bureaucracy, as it were, one that is nonpartisan and exists through presidencies. But all right, listen, so we only have a couple more minutes here. Now, we haven't had much of our year-end look back look forward.
A big surprise.
Well, you know, but the amazing thing is like, I don't know. I mean, first off, I don't remember a year that I want to forget about as quickly and as determinedly than this year, in my lifetime anyways. Certainly not on a national level. I've had a couple of rough years individually. But with that said, looking forward, so much of what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks, it seems to me, is going to determine what the next year looks like in this country. Because if the Democrats, if we can secure this extra $1,400 for Americans, that's going to help. It's not going to be solve anything, but it's going to be a big help, at least in the first couple of months of the Biden administration. If the Democrats can take Georgia, which this whole $2,000 thing helps significantly with, if they can take Georgia, they can at least have one crack at a big bill. Never mind, Joe Biden will be able to seat his administration quickly and will be able to start to nominate judges and get them through. I mean, that's going to be a big deal. I mean, this is so much of looking forward is contingent upon the next 10 days, really, in many respects.
Well, I mean, I've been feeling that since, you know, Election Day, when we realized we had to go to the runoff in Georgia and it became obvious that the majority in the Senate hinged on those two races. And I'm, you know, I am trying very hard not to get my hopes up. I mean, it's Georgia. You know, there's a history of runoffs down there. I mean, that's a weird system that they have. I'm, you know, hopeful because I think that there's a great grassroots organizing down there. I think there's obviously a lot of interest, and they're taught, you know, the early vote has been as big, I guess, as the presidential. Now we'll see if this week, because of Christmas, whether or not any of that holds up. But it does look as though there is plenty of enthusiasm, and I assume it's on both sides. Are activated. So this is, you know, it's probably going to be a nail biter. But I've been feeling that way. I mean, it's a big disappointment that we were unable to get the majority in the Senate just clear cut and be able to plan going forward. But as you and I've talked about before, Sam, that's no guarantee either, because when you have a very tight Senate, even when it's not that tight, even when you've got a 60 vote majority, the Senate's an inherently undemocratic institution, and you always have a group in the middle, you know, Democrats from red states and some sort of semi-moderate Republicans like, you know, Mitt Romney or Lisa Murkowski or somebody like that, who really form this. They always do it, and we just saw them do it with this COVID bill. They get together and they call themselves the problem solvers or the Gang of Eight or whatever. They give themselves some name, and they end up sort of taking over whatever big legislation you're trying to do and end up watering it down, whether we like it or not. I mean, this is always a problem. And then there's a few divas on both sides who decide to stage a tantrum of some sort, or, you know, gore somebody's ox that they've been wanting to gore for a long time. So I'm just putting that out there, because even if we had won it, it was never going to be easy.
Well, but you know, it's always better. I want to take a break, and I want to just return to that, because that's the other element. There was a piece in there was a buried in that Washington Post on how this bill came together. The Washington Post piece was Joe Biden basically telling Democrats, Don't go too big on this. You know, let's keep it, small enough. You don't have to ask for much more. And actually asking them to back off on some of their demands, which, let's take a quick break. We'll talk a little bit about that and this notion of like the so-called centrists who supposedly have no ideology whatsoever. But it turns out that in practice, they have an ideology. We'll get to a quick break. We're back. Heather, so we had Mark Warner come out, and I think you saw this. He got on television very quickly and was almost, you know, taking that role. And people should understand what happens here. Like, even if you were to get rid of the filibuster for legislation, all that would do would be to change the cohort of people who would be sort of like pushed off the island as to who gets to be in the middle. There are a group of senators who want to be at the fulcrum of everything. And there's more of them on the Democratic side, because on the in the Republicans have become far less inclined to stray from what their constituents want, frankly. But you have your Mark Warners. I would imagine we're going to see Mark Kelly do this as well. We're going to see if maybe Ossoff or Warnock, they might be people like that as well. There's a couple others in the Chris Coons, maybe. There's a couple others in the Senate who are always going to do this. They're going to go, and presumably they have no ideology, although it turns out to be a policy set that helps people whose ideology might be that we need to maintain wealth in a certain group of people. Like, give me your sense of where do you think Biden's going to be on this? Because he already did that. You know, he sent the signal to the Democrats, like, just, you know, calm down. Don't ask for too much. We know back in the day, you and I used to talk about this all the time, he did an end run against Harry Reid. When the Republicans were up against it, there was a fiscal cliff. This was back in 2010, I think it was. Maybe it was 11. And undermined Harry Reid's attempt to negotiate and get taxes raised on corporations and whatnot. What do you think we're going to see?
Well, I think Joe Biden has always overrated his negotiating skills. You go back and look at his history in the Senate, and he's never been as good at that as he thinks he is. And the Senate is a different place than it was when he was a senator anyway, largely because of what you said. The Republicans are, you know, they're in safe, very red states with a rabid constituency that will support them, even if they can shut down the government for 6 months, and their constituents would be fine with that. I mean, that's part of, you know, the problem that we have with this polarized situation. This is a very different world than Joe Biden once lived in as a senator and even as a vice president. I mean, it's gotten exponentially worse over the last, you know, I don't know, 12 years at least. So, you know, I worry about it, to be honest with you. I do think that he is inclined to believe that he has some kind of a magic touch in this way, and that he's going to be able to get on the horn with Mitch and whoever. And this is regardless of whether or not the Democrats have a majority. Having the majority is super important because, as you said, you can get his cabinet officials confirmed, judges, and mostly they can set the agenda. Instead of having Mitch McConnell not allowing any amendments or, you know, requiring all these things to get legislation just to the floor, you'd have Democrats, you'd have Chuck Schumer, you know, at least getting it to the floor, which we can't do now. So it's hugely important. And I don't mean to underrate it or say it doesn't matter, because it certainly matters. But in terms of actually getting legislation done, the dynamic that you just described of these people in the middle, the problem solvers or whatever they want to call themselves, you know, they're always in there just kind of going, yeah. And Joe Biden is one of them. So what we have is, I'm not sure how long, you know, the one thing that I feel is that, you know, what's different now, first of all, there's a very active, progressive, activist class that is not going to, like under Obama, it kind of all fell apart because that was kind of more of a cult of personality in many ways. And it didn't really last. It wasn't organized around any kind of ideology or even philosophy. That's not true now. That this exists outside, it has nothing to do with Joe Biden, that's for sure. But there is a recognition of how to leverage power within the institutions. I'm seeing a lot more of that, a lot more of savvy kind of using progressive strength within the two institutions. And it's not, you know, you got Bernie Sanders over there kind of, you know, putting his arm around Josh Hawley, on the, you know, the yeah. senator for the jury with, you know, I mean, Josh Hawley is not our friend. I mean, I hope everybody knows that. But he, but there was Bernie Sanders making common cause with him over trying to get the, you know, this COVID payment up to $1,200. See, that's the kind of savvy maneuvering that you haven't seen from the progressives in the Congress doing very much of. So I think we're going to see more of that. And there's going to be much more pressure on Biden and much more pressure on those centrists than there used to be. And they're using it wisely. It's not just flailing around saying, let's go, you know, pound on the doors of the Congress and do, you know, I mean, there'll be some of that, which can sometimes be useful. But this is actual institutional power being used to push people in ways that, you know, and particularly to push these Republicans in ways they really don't want to be pushed. So I'm, you know, I'm on the one hand, I'm totally prepared to see a lot more of this Mark Warner stuff where he gets up and goes, yeah, they all sat around for months, the Democrats and the Republicans couldn't get anything done. Then we came in and we sat down and we hashed it out and we, you know, we got her done, you know, and it's just kind of, oh, shut up. You know, I mean, that, where were you 6 months ago, Warner? You know, you weren't doing anything. And now you're coming into, you know, sailing in at the end when, you know, time was running out and everybody had to get something done or there were going to be, you know, deaths as a result. So shut up. Yeah. But we're going to see more of that. But by the same token, I think we're also going to see more of the things like Sanders and Hawley. We're going to see things, people in the House, the Progressive Caucus is, I think, becoming a much more effective yes. Caucus in there. And that's super important because there's a whole bunch of them. And if they can actually, you know, leverage their power in there, then we're going to see some pressure in the House. And, you know, whether Biden likes it or not, he has to deal with that side of his coalition as well. And there are a lot of them. So,
and I think we can look at
that's basically what I see.
I think we can look at his cabinet picks and we can see somebody who is trying to sort of like placate different parts of the party. And, you know, I think he is inclined to placate the high dollar folks and the more conservative elements, but he has there has been at least a recognition. You can see it a little bit in his Secretary of Education. You can see it in his Department of Interior. We can see it a little bit on the Council for Economic Advisors and more. Heather, thank you for your insight this year, and we will rely on it again next year, folks. If you're watching us on the Choice app or I should say the Peacock app on the Choice channel. You can watch us at 5 p.m. or 10 p.m. We've got Best Of happening, for all next week.
Yeah.
And, you can also just, search Majority Report on the Peacock app and you can find us at any time. We will be back January 4th with, our next live show for Emma and, Heather. We'll see you then. And for those of you,
happy holidays.
Well, we'll stick around a little bit more, Heather, because now we're, you know, so, I mean, I think like this is about as good of a place you'd want to be for, you know, this is a nice little gift from Donald Trump.
Yeah,
and on some level,
he's in the Christmas spirit, you know,
in some level it's, you know, I remember at the beginning of the Trump administration, we were like, what happens if he comes out and gets to the left of the Democrats on infrastructure, let's say, like, you know, and that was a real possibility and it was really interesting. And I think that, like, you know, Pelosi and Schumer, and it remains to be seen if Pelosi has the vote, but in terms of like their political in that moment response, I was very, very pleased. They were on it very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it also shows the value, the enormous value to have AOC into Libs bill right there. You need something written up. Here it is. Or you need the concept of $2,000 out here. Here it is in the Senate with Hawley and Sanders. Like a 3 days ago, somebody could have said that's completely futile. Why waste your time? Why, you know, but you gotta be ready if the opportunity knocks. It doesn't knock that often.
Boy, isn't that the
truth? Be ready.
Isn't that the truth? And, you know, that follows with campaigning as well. I remember years ago, sort of, I was working with a you know, a PAC, a progressive PAC. And we noticed that in many races, they didn't bother to put up a candidate. The Democrats would just go, oh, we can't win that. Why are we even bothering? They wouldn't recruit anybody. They wouldn't. There's always somebody around. I mean, you know, and if you encourage that, you build the party where it needs, you know, places where things change, like in Georgia, for instance, where no one expected that that was going to go blue. And now we're looking at maybe it's going blue. I mean, there were and that's mostly because people, organizers on the ground, people like Stacey Abrams and other groups down there have been working their hearts out for years to do that and to get that turn some of those districts in the state blue. So it's the same thing. So what would happen is that, you know, I don't know, the guy, the Republican who was unbeatable would suddenly be caught in some, you know, child trafficking ring or something and have to break out at the last minute. And the Democrats wouldn't have a candidate in the race. And it's like, you always have to be prepared for something to happen in legislation, in politics, in whatever. Have a plan B here. At least have something at the ready in case you get an opportunity to do it. This is a perfect example. And it shouldn't have been that hard for them to think, and it wasn't this time, but normally it would have been, that you would have this at the ready, because Donald Trump is completely, you know, I mean, he's out of his mind. He's completely losing it. And who knew what he was going to do? And it was entirely possible that he was going to want to stab Mitch McConnell in the back, which is, you know, again, what I said earlier, that's what this is about. Right.
What's amazing, though, to me is that, you know, we did all hypothesize potentially could he be more populist than the left when he came into office or do some of these things. And he's only doing it now, like in 2016 and like he renewed some of this talk in 2022 when his electoral butt is on the line. And he's deluded himself into thinking he still has a chance now and then also potentially in 2024 if that's what he decides to do. But he has those instincts to crowd surf and to throw money out like he's in the mob, but he's not smart enough to strategically use them at the right time. And that's to our benefit, right? And it's benefiting the Democrats right now. Because he does know things like this are populist and popular, and the $1,200 checks did give him a boost, but he can't fuse the two of them together. If he had done this and made this push over and over again before the election, I bet there was a great chance that he could have won the election. Instead, he did culture war nonsense.
And also, we should also say, that's a very good point, because in the same way that we look at the HEROES Act and say $3.5 trillion and called the HEROES Act, the only thing I can tell you from the $1.8 trillion deal from the White House is that it was $1.8 trillion. If he had come out and said in those negotiations, Mnuchin had come out and said, we want $2,000 and we're going to force the Democrats to give it to us. I mean, you know, Pelosi could have said, well, we're for $3,000. I mean, and so
puts them in a very uncomfortable position. It puts Pelosi and Schumer, more traditional Democrats, in a very uncomfortable position. It puts someone like Mark Warner, who we've talked about a lot, or Amy Klobuchar in incredibly uncomfortable positions. And it puts Joe Biden in an uncomfortable position. Yeah. Like, Biden is going to be in, or I think, or in the Democrats, for a world of hurt in 2022 if they don't match this kind of rhetoric, which they're stepping up to the plate right now. I get it, but Biden's not really anywhere to be found.
We'll see. We'll see. You know, there's one president at the time, I guess. And, you know, if Biden, there's no way Biden's saying don't do $2,000 at this point. There's no way. I mean,
Amy Klobuchar did. But, you know, I don't think Biden's going to do that. I think Biden will say, you know, yeah, I'll go for it. You know, do it. I haven't heard, actually. Have we heard anything from the Biden camp on this? Because I haven't.
I don't think we will. Like, I don't know what the value is of Biden doing that. Like,
no, I agree. I just mean, once he is president, he would never consider doing something like this. And I think what Trump's doing right now, I mean, it's also partially nuts, but populism, like in the back of his mind, right? That's a problem for Democrats, because the economic recovery from this and the post-vaccine life and the economic hurt and the deep pain, that's going to be critical to Democrats holding into power in 2022 and 2024.
I do love the fact that Klobuchar just didn't get the memo. And when she freelances, her instinct is wrong.
Everybody hit her hard the minute she said it. It was something else.
All right. Well, Heather, I meant when I said earlier, always a pleasure to talk to you, but I, you're my favorite person to have on at the end of the year. And if I really actually even remember this year, even a slight bit, I would talk more about it. But thanks so much for having me. And we'll see you in 20.
Oh, my pleasure,
Heather.
I'll be here.
Oh, there we go. Before we wrap up the free half and head into the fun half at the end of this year, I didn't want to spend a lot of time looking back on this year. We didn't go through do extra content. We did some best ofs, kept it for the last couple of months because we wanted to keep it stuff that we had video on. And, you know, this has been a horrible year for everybody in many respects, obviously because of the pandemic. But around here, it's been even worse. It is impossible to look back on this year and not, at least in my mind, and I'm sure in most of yours, see it dominated by the loss of Michael Brooks, who, you know, been on the show for 8 years and the vast majority of the years that the show's been in existence. And so, it's been a huge loss. His work is still, you can find it at the Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. And of course, you know, throughout the 10 years on this program, there's Alicia, his sister, and Matt, and the whole TMBS crew are putting together Griscom, the shows, some shows to retrospective shows, tribute shows. I'm going to be doing one with Andy Kindler and David Feldman. We're going to be talking about the comedy that Michael did, and I'm not sure when that's going to happen. We're going to record it over the break, but you know, to the extent, what a crappy year to dedicate to somebody in some respects, but you know, this year obviously dedicated to the memory of Michael Brooks, and he will be missed. You know, we. Hopefully we can get back into the studio for much of next year. It will be a while before we're all in here. You know, Em and I have the opportunity to come in on, you know, on occasion and with our big tarp and whatnot, and it's a huge mess in here. But hopefully when we all get back into the studio, we can set things up in such a way that we can have more audio drops and we can drop in you know, things like Michael's laugh here and there, and keep his spirit alive in the show, at least in terms of voice. I mean, but his ideas and, you know, his reaction to the news of the day. We will, with the ideas we have in the work that he's done in the past, it's up there. But in terms of like going forward, it's just a huge void. And it's, you know, it's not easy to deal with. On a day-to-day basis, but it's a real loss for the show, for you folks, and you know, in many respects, for our politics, particularly, you know, on the left. So, wanted to say that and just remind you, you go check out Nomi's show. Not sure who's on today, but you can find it at youtube.com/ the Nomi Keyes Show, and. You want to support this program, you can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Support the free show. We give you the fun half just about every day, except for the next week. We've got best ofs happening this week. I may hop on at one point and do like a year-end all phone call show, in which case, you know, get the app and we'll send out a text message that's happening. You can get the app at majorityapp.com. And we'll be doing it on YouTube unless we get, I don't know, we're working on a video system. Just we'll go and we'll do our pitches, but I just want to thank all of our audience, our members, of course, but everyone who participates in the show, calls into the show, IMs the show, listens to the show. I mean, this is, we have a great community watching it now with folks you know, sending their condolences to John from San Antonio. Moments like that are very, very gratifying to just see the care in which people treat each other in this community. So it's much appreciated. Jamie, tell us what's happening on the Antifada.
Wow, that's a tough one to follow. Just going to go for it. So this week, this week on the Antifada, we have a festive Christmas episode, and it's about anti-Semitism, specifically anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial on the Marxist left. The boys go over why Marx is not guilty of it in On the Jewish Question, but how structural anti-Semitism is, in fact, all over the place, and you better watch out. So that's up now, patreon.com/theantifada. Also, we're doing a Twitch stream tonight at 7 with some of our friends from Trash Future, which is a very funny podcast in the UK. We're going to be talking about Brexit, COVID relief, how Boris Johnson is dicking everything up. So that'll be pretty fun. That's at twitch.tv/theantifada. Also, I wanted to let everyone know this is a very cool new project that I'm involved in. It is an eco-socialist video game called The Promised Land. And I'm not much of a gamer, but I'm on the advisory board for it because I do know about socialism and media. And it's a cool game. You should check it out. I tweeted about it. I'm going to put a link in the episode description. It's like, it's pretty chill. You walk around, you vibe, you grow plants. It's free, but there are purchases you can make in the app. And then 60% of the money is going to various environmental and mutual aid groups. So check that out.
Is it like a phone app? Like, is it what platform?
I played it on the computer when I did the beta test. I am not the right person to ask these questions.
I am also gamer illiterate too, so I completely empathize.
Is it something like that? That Milo would be good.
Totally. It's like, I'd say it's like comparable to Farmville, maybe. I don't know. They've got some cool retro graphics. It's just like, it's not competitive. It's really my speed as video games go.
Interesting. All right. Well, I will. We'll have that link in the show notes. Matt, what's happening over, I don't know, through the next year, let's say. Why don't you catch up on what's happening on the Matt Leck audio empire for the next year?
Yes. There'll be a new literary hangover before the end of the year on William Byrd's. He was a planter in 17th century at the start of 1700s, Virginia, and he kept a diary every single day, and some of them he just confessed, like sex crimes and things like that. Really crazy stuff, but also like a very, Prager, you would like a statue of this guy, for instance. He's that sort of thing. Anyway, also tonight, Left Reckoning, we're doing our shows on Wednesday this week and next week because the holidays. So we have Ashok Kumar on to talk about India's farmers' protest general strike.
All right. Well, there it is. I don't know.
Wait, can I say one more thing? I forgot.
Sure.
I feel like I'm being greedy today with the plugs, but you know what? I learned it from the best. Michael would have been very proud of me. We are on Majority Report next week, so I'm going to plug this now. We are doing a year in review episode with Mike Davis, the greatest living Marxist historian, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm very excited about that. And that's going to be out a week from today.
Oh, he had a piece. We were going to book him for a piece.
Yeah. Answer your emails, Professor Davis.
He always answers mine.
Oh, well, maybe you can help us out. And Brendan, get on that. Jamie, he answers Jamie's emails. All right, folks, we will see you in the fun half if we are saying goodbye to you for 2020. Thanks for tuning in. We will look forward to hearing from you in 2021. Remember, if you pick up the app at majorityapp.com, it's completely free. We will send out a text message if I hop on and do any type of like a phone call show or who knows what. So we will check you then. Otherwise, we will see you in the fun half.
are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy.
Alpha males are back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a man.
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Dannerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dannerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break for people.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Fucking reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Hell out the bank. Hell out the bank. Hell out the bank. Hell out the bank. Hell out the bank.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black. Africans. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black. Black, black, black.
See Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock on us.
Come on!
Fuck them, fuck them, fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back. Africans are black, black.
Come on! What? Come on! What? Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.